Hello, Belinda.
Hi, Omar.
So we are in between season one and season two of our podcast, where we are getting an opportunity to invite different people to cover different topics. And so this week, what are we covering?
We are celebrating the tenacious teachers that hold so much space for children in the schools right now.
Well, this is a topic dear to my heart, given that both my parents are teachers and educators. My dad's a professor and my mom a teacher in LA Unified School District. And so, you know, couldn't be happier to celebrate teachers and educators.
And one of the things I just really appreciate about this weekly practice of just like connecting back to what matters, what's important, and rooting that in nature. You know, I was thinking about, wow, like, you know, first of all, my first job out of college was teaching. So I was a teacher through Teach for America. And, you know, so I just have so much respect for this profession. And I was like, well, what is, of the 39 grad to blooming themes, what would be the one that really like embodies like a teacher? And this week it really felt like tenacity. And I think one of the things like that just is just like, I'm seeing them all, the dandelions, you know, representing tenacity in our card deck everywhere right now, because they're just cropping up with springtime. And I'm just really in awe of how much resilience it takes to be a teacher. And, you know, you go to school and you learn the pedagogy and all the things. And then, you know, you show up in a classroom and all of a sudden you basically have to be this like improv performer with like goals, you know? And so it's like, it's so many things. It's creative, it's technical, it's like caretaking and caregiving. So much is involved in that. So for today's show, I'm honored to introduce my dear friend, Mellory Masakopan. And Mellory and I first connected around just having a lot of mutual friends who are educators. And she's an amazing writer, former classroom teacher who now is actually devoting her life to supporting teachers and their wellness, and really focusing on how can we also focus on our own self-care and our own healing as we're giving so much to others in the classroom and in our community. So I was really inspired by Mellory in the ways that she also brings like creativity into self-care and healing. Mellory and I've hosted couple gratitude blooming happy hours a couple years ago, and she had an open mic circle where people would connect and share their poetry and their art around different gratitude blooming themes. So it's been beautiful to, Mel, get to know you and now be able to share, you know, your practice with the community, part of a community that you're part of, and be able to have them as our guests today. So Mellory, would you please just share the community that, you know, is being represented today and the people that are here?
Oh, thank you so much, Bea. That's such a warm welcome. And I think you'd love to know that just recently our group had an open mic and we shared our poetry, songs, and our creative expression. So I love that theme of creativity being a part of our wellness and a part of teacher health and vitality. It's just so fitting. I'm so happy that we have this continuing thread. And I'm so happy to bring folks here from the Racial Healing Affinity Group that we share as part of the Teaching Wells initiative this year. And the Teaching Well is a nonprofit consulting group disrupting teacher turnover nationwide. And this year, we're taking a journey with embodied educators to explore anti-racism and racial healing. So our group of Asian American Pacific Islander educators is one of nine affinity groups that are convening in race-alike spaces to begin this process. And at the end of this school year, we're all coming together in a multiracial convening, actually, to share what we've experienced as we've listened to each other, become open to one another's perspectives and experiences, allowing ourselves to transform and be impacted by hearing each other's stories, and engaging in somatic practices to address the trauma and the bias that lives in the body. And I'm really struck by your reflection, Omar, actually, about how this personal healing can be transmitted wherever we go. And that's essentially the idea of why we're convening, so that we can heal within ourselves and then also within affinity and then across difference, and continue this collective healing of multiracial dynamics here in this country in integrity.
What's great about hosting these conversations is we get to unpack things in a different way. And you use a lot of words that if you're talking to a particular community, they might be familiar with, but another community may not be. And so I'd love for you to unpack three words. So one is, I think you said embodied educators or something along those lines. And so what is an embodied educator? The second is, you talk about sort of somatic healing. And I think that word is used a lot. And I think somatic healing is like the new mindfulness. And so I think it's really important to, you know, break some of these things down. And then the third word you use is affinity groups. And, you know, those are, for those that run in those circles, I know that there's sort of an understanding, but it's sometimes not always accessible for everyone.
Thank you so much, Omar. Yeah, I think this is a great question to also share with the group, but I'll do my best to share what I can here. It's an ever-evolving conversation, for sure. But I would say that when embodied educators are referred to, I would say that it's an educator that is connected to their bodies while they're teaching and relating to other bodies. So they're aware of their breath. They're aware of the sensations in their body as different situations arise in their classrooms, in their worlds, and they move from a place of awareness in that way, so that they create spaces where all bodies that are present can easily breathe.
I love that. So it's like saying, hey, instead of us just taking a time out to do a meditation, how do we actually stay present in the moment? And I recently learned this expression of hand, heart, head. And the idea is that when you learn anything, you have to learn it in your head, you have to learn it in your heart, and you have to learn it in your hands, right? Like, it's actually something you have to embody.
And this might be a good time for each of our educators to share on that, because what a beautiful opportunity to like hear from people from, you know, different Asian American identities teaching in schools and now doing the somatic work. I'd love to take this opportunity for Mel to introduce each person and have you all share, what is that somatic practice for you and in the work of really thinking about race and culture in education? You know, as a classroom teacher, for me in 2001, it was very mental, very much intellectual. You know, I remember doing affinity groups of people of color coming together, talking about race and how does, you know, white supremacy affect, you know, our experience as teachers of color. But it was very much an intellectual conversation. And what I'm loving about this community here in this moment is it's also about, you know, how is your body? How is it your body feeling? What is the energy in your body as you're digesting your experience as a teacher? And then also then connecting it back to how you're relating to your kids. And then how does that connect in with ancestral healing? So Mel, do you want to, would anyone like to go first? And we can have Mel introduce you and you can kind of share what that practice has been like.
Yeah, well, I'm going to lovingly invite Jen to come share. And Jen Wolf is a biracial Thai American mathematics teacher, educator, and scholar at the University of Arizona.
So in my practice, I work at the University of Arizona. So I'm a math teacher educator. So what that means is I work with people who undergraduates who want to be future middle and high school math teachers. I also work with teachers that are currently in school. So those are in-service teachers, and it's around mathematics. And so I'm just reflecting on, Mel had a great introduction there. Yeah, because there's so much that we've unpacked together as a community. And for me to think about what my teaching was like and how I related to my undergraduates, my students, my future teachers before COVID hit and the racial reckoning, right? And then now where we are, so much has happened where I've really been more intentional about how are we centering one another's humanity? How do we see one another as human? I often do things that you might not think a stereotypical math professor would do. We start all of my classes with an invitation to breathe because we often don't recognize that we're, you know, we breathe, right? But are we breathing? And then as we're breathing, noticing how our bodies feel. I usually start out like inviting the breath to come in and then notice if you're holding any tension in your shoulders, in your body. Maybe it feels good to stand up, maybe move your hips from side to side, deep breaths in. And it's always an invitation because sometimes it can be very awkward when you're in a space with people that you don't know and they're like, close your eyes and breathe. And then they stop breathing because we're like, no. So then it's always an invitation and I never know who actually does it because I always close my eyes, but I feel like it's a way to kind of set intention for learning in community, giving gratitude for being here, and just setting those intentions. And so that kind of carries with us through class, right? That's how we set it up. That's how we go. And I've done that through online, remote, emergency, synchronous teaching, as well as continued it and practiced in the physical classroom.
Can you repeat that again? Just because I love that it used to be when you taught a class, it was very clear. You're in a classroom and you teach. And you just listed like three or four different ways in which you're having to educate folks. Just so even just name those different ways that you're now having to like hold space.
Yeah. So yeah, that's one of the things that's been really challenging as educators across K-16 is that when COVID hit, we went from being in person to teaching online. And online teaching looked very different for different people in different districts and different schools. So it might have been online, and being synchronous means that we're doing it live. We're interacting on Zoom in real time. And then asynchronous is when you're not doing that, but you might be interacting in some other platform.
So like chatting or, you know,
chatting or like a course management system like Google Classroom. And then you're just doing work, but it's on your own time.
I mean, I think it's just so important to acknowledge that complexity, right? Because we're talking about somatic work, which is about being in our bodies. And yet we're not necessarily even getting to share physical space anymore. And yet we still are being asked to be physically present.
Yeah. And I think the somatic practice has been really helpful in these transitions of being in person, online. Now we're back in person. And when we were online, I'm sure many other educators felt this way, but you know, to make sure that we were engaging in equitable teaching practices, a lot of them, like school districts and myself and other departments and things, said, you know, we weren't going to require cameras to be on because we don't want to engage in something like video classism. Like, I can imagine if I were just me personally, if I had to show what my room looks like as a kid, right? And I had my siblings all over the place, and like, I would have been embarrassed. And so a lot of the districts and schools didn't require cameras. And so what happens when you don't require cameras is that you just see a sea of black boxes with names, or there might be a picture if people have uploaded a photo. So it really just kind of challenged us in a way to how do we still connect with one another? And I found that breathing practice at the start was one way to start connecting with one another, or feeling comfortable sharing in the chat, and still moving into in-person, being back in the classroom. I find that inviting that breath in the beginning kind of disrupts a little bit their notion of what it means to come into classroom and to do math from the start, because it moves towards, I'm going to center our humanity first, and I teach people in community with one another before I teach the content.
Now I'd love to invite Tiff, to the conversation. So Tiffany Chan is a Chinese American educator and visual artist who seeks to build equitable and compassionate learning communities.
I was a public school teacher and coach for teachers for 10 years. And actually, during the pandemic, I transitioned into, I'm a learning experience designer at a virtual school, a project-based learning virtual school. And so we will be online before, during, after COVID. And in this role, I've been a teacher. Our teachers are called coaches, and a curriculum designer. And as a learning experience designer, I wear a lot of hats, but I mainly think about the needs of our children and how we can build the structures, systems, curriculum, content to meet those needs. So it's kind of broad. But what really struck me is, and this is something that I've been reflecting a lot in my own practice as an embodied educator, right? I don't think I've like gotten the tiara of like, I am an embodied educator. I've reached this nirvana. I think that's part of the beauty of this journey is, I will continue to be learning, but I'm really struck by just what does it mean to be an embodied educator in a remote era? Mm-hmm. I think those of us that have had some experience in this arena are used to holding space in a physical space. And so how do we do that in a virtual setting when you've got kids coming in? So like our school's a national, actually international school. So we have kids coming in from different time zones, all across different households, with different backgrounds and needs. And how do we create that space and cultivate it? This is just a great conversation for me to be in because I'm actually tasked with this next year. I'm going to be looking deeply at how we incorporate social emotional learning in all parts of our curriculum and our classes, and thinking about how we use our daily community meeting spaces in ways that support our learners to be their best selves. So in the past, I have also invited learners, you know, it's difficult when you're learning at home. You have to have, I mean, when you're working from home too, there's like a trend, the line between your personal and work or school life is very thin and almost non-existent.
You talked about social emotional learning and how you're integrating that into your curriculum. And I was just thinking the other day how we have an understanding of how you train your mind, right? And that's what we go, here we go to school, you train your mind. And we have a notion of, well, where do you train your body? Well, you go to the gym, or you can sort of, you know, playgrounds, or, you know, there's different ways that you can train your body. And it is only now that we're beginning to actually have conversations about where do you train your emotions, right? Because in a shared way, like, oh, you can go to a therapist, or, you know, but that's then all of a sudden it's a one-on-one. There's not a sort of social practice around emotional training. And it's just kind of mind-boggling that we've never had that as a society, that we know how much emotions sort of affect, you know, your ability to think through things, and, you know, and how much your body, you know, affects your emotions. And so it's so strange to me that only now in 2022 are we really sort of saying, like, hey, you have the mind, you have the body, and you have these things called emotions. And we haven't until now created a public space for that conversation to really be had.
I mean, I think that's, emotions are where the mind and the body meet, right? Emotions manifest in the body. I think there's such like a tendency, in my experience in Western culture, to just center emotions and just the mind, but they come out in the body. Like, we feel.
I love that definition. Emotions are where the body and the mind meet. I'm stealing that. Thank you very much.
I mean, my favorite way to develop, you can call it what you want, classroom rules, expectations, community norms, right? Is to do this collectively, right? Mm-hmm. So it's not this hierarchy where the teacher determines, like, these are the rules of the classroom. What I like to do at the start of the year is, okay, let's make a list. What are all the things that you expect and need from me as your teacher? Mm-hmm. And we will laundry list all of them. And then I will say, okay, well, this is what I would expect and need from you, right? As a learner in our community. And then, hey, what do you expect and need from your parents? Right? And what do we need from your parents as well? Because it's the three of us working together. And then we have this whole like ritual ceremony of the signing. I used to like light candles in my classroom, in my physical classroom, and play music. And we would all like sign this poster together. And that was that was, like, our community was born for the year.
That's like a sacred contract, Tiffany. I love that. And so many lessons you can learn in the classroom that translate into like workplace culture, like what you just said. I'm like, oh my goodness. All the leaders that are listening right now with teams, make it a ritual. Team agreements.
It's so important. Sometimes I find it like mind-boggling, because oftentimes in schools or organizations, you know, that work with kids, you come up with like, what are the values that we want, like, to, you know, to be embodied in our program for kids? But then it's like, it doesn't translate over to adults. So I think that's really important, you know, as an organization, like top down across each way, like how do these values manifest? And they should in every practice.
Mm-hmm. I love that, because it's really getting at how are we coming to a shared understanding and community? Because a lot of the time you'll see these classroom rules or norms, or like in my class, we call them community agreements, but that's very purposeful, because it's an agreement of the community. And we go further and we say, okay, what do you need to learn math? We need to feel respected. Okay, that's wonderful. But what does that look like? What does that sound like? What does that mean? Because we're going to have different views about that, right? And I think I loved what Tiffany shared there, because we're trying to do that in community and understand and come to that shared understanding, and then put practices into place where we hold each other up to those agreement. And then we revisit them often, because sometimes things need to change.
So Mel, we have one more guest. I'd love to have you introduce them.
This next wonderful human being is Bong Lau, and they are a Cantonese somatics and mindfulness coach, singer, and visual artist who lives to cultivate creativity in themselves and others. And they are actually the co-facilitator with me in this A Racial Healing Affinity Group. And I'm just so happy that you could be here with us, Bong.
Ah, Mel. It's good to be here. And it's also so good to see Jennifer and Tiffany here and just get to know more of your stories. yeah, each and every time is a blessing. And Belinda and Omar, thank you for having us today.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks for joining.
And I'm going to do some somatics right now because I'm a little nervous. So I'm noticing my heart beating a little faster. I'm noticing just jitteriness. So I'm going to take a few deep breaths to be with that. I'm not trying to push it away. I'm trying to just be with that, be present. And if you'd like to join me, please do. Breathing a deep breath in, feeling where I feel that breath, breathing out. Noticing the physical sensations, breathing in and out. And one more just to help me out. Yeah. Yeah, I feel much more slow now, much more able to be here, even with the nervousness. And I was just thinking, as people were sharing about why somatics is so needed in the education field. I was an art teacher for 8 years prior to joining the Teaching Well to become a somatics and mindfulness coach. And so often when I needed to use the restroom, I had to wait 2 hours. You know, I couldn't eat because I had to prep for a class or there's a class coming. And so I had to teach hungry and needing to use the restroom and perhaps tired. And how I was in those states when my body was clearly speaking to me and I wasn't able to honor my body in that way and care for my body is that I often took it out on the kids, on the students, and in ways that don't match my values, and in ways that I would have to think about that night and come back and be better or not. And I think the choice always, I don't want to say always, it's like the choice, I choose to come back as best as I can to these students. And something that you said, Omar, about the body connection, body exploration, is like, why do I do that? It's like, I know you said it was like one of the first times that we're doing this as a society. And I was like thinking, it's like, was it the first time we're doing it as a society in this major level where we have billions of people? And these are not new practices. Following our breath, feeling our feet on the ground, these are practices from our ancestors that kept our community well and safe and in circle with each other. So it's just following my breath, feeling my feet on the ground, other practices helps me feel a connection to my ancestors. Also, being able to feel my body, the bones, the tissues, the DNA, really. It's like those are all my ancestors living inside of me. So that's how somatics is affecting me personally right now. As I deepen into the sensitivities of caring for my body, just like I'm receiving more information about myself. And it's really cool. Yeah, I think that's a good place for me to stop right now. And if there's any questions or any other flow you'd like to go in.
I appreciate you showing in real time how these practices can work. And I think I also appreciate you acknowledging kind of we've had these sort of lessons. We've in many ways just forgotten them or they have not been part of mainstream society. And, you know, because I do think that, you know, whether it's ancestral traditions or even, you know, religions where like singing and music are embodied practices. And you know, we have disconnected from those or been disconnected from those. And it reminded me of, I think it was the Asaro tribal saying that says, knowledge is just a rumor until it's felt in the bones. And so how do we really expect to know something if we don't know how to listen to our body, right? How are we really expected to know something if we don't know, we don't have a vocabulary, or we've lost the vocabulary to acknowledge our full range of our emotions and feelings? And so in many ways, what you're able to do is sort of revive this sort of knowledge. And I was thinking about this the other day, that like, obviously in Western culture, there's like a dominance of the mind, right? And the I think, therefore I am. And that is sort of driven sort of a cultural approach to education, which we've clearly seen has shortcomings at best, right? And if not erasure at worst. And so, you know, as you're now integrating these practices, what are some of the obstacles that you're facing? Because you now in some ways are being given a huge responsibility to reintroduce social emotional learning where there hasn't been that type of education in a very long time. And so what does it mean to almost be responsible for rebuilding that vocabulary?
Some of the obstacles to being well somatically in the body is the environment we're in, right? We're swimming in racism. We're swimming in patriarchy and all these oppressions. And so what gets me through somatically are my disciplines, even when it's difficult, even when it's joyous, or anywhere in between. I do standing meditations every day. And specifically why I do that is because my left hip is, and glute and like ab area is so tight now, and it's like in perpetual pain. And when I do not do that, I feel it. When I do that, I notice there's some easing. Another thing that I try to do every day is singing, just like you said about those traditions. Because it transports me. I had a very busy day today. And I'm so, actually, this is just an upliftment because I was a little tired before coming here. And so thank you for that. And right before then, this meeting, I was just singing, right? Playing my guitar, singing in the sun. I was like, okay, that actually gave me the energy to be present here. So very practically. And another thing is just finding that exercise that is helping my body heal. Because there's a lot of stuff happening, especially with all the oppressions that I've talked about earlier. Also, something that does affect me is that I forget the circle. I forget the community. And I feel like I have to handle things all on my own. And so this is community right here. This is helpful that I don't need to do it all on my own, which is something I'm exploring. In these last 2 months, I was just like, okay, can I be vulnerable? Can I share and let people in that I don't need to do it all myself? And especially as an educator right now, and granted, I'm not working directly with young ones right now. I'm working with educators, that there's so much happening. There's so much trauma, especially from COVID, especially from the second pandemic of systemic racism, and affecting people differently. And it affects me as an Asian Chinese American person to see everything that's happening.
Pong, I feel like just feeling your words and how you talk about where it lands in your body and the left side of your body being so tight. Is it that like all of the weight of the system that you talk about, the oppression, does it live there? And that's, you know, that's why you're doing these practices, is to alleviate that? Like, is there a connection with that pain that you physically feel in your body with the heaviness of what you're saying that you see and you feel?
I have intuited that it's like, okay, yes, this is actually a huge piece of oppression, that me as an Asian American person, male, cis identified, now exploring they, them, it's like, has not been fully allowed to be a creative being in this country. And I see it linked to my sacral, sacral being like the creative energy center. And it's built up for now 40 years of my life. And so what I'm noticing is that it is changing. I'm intentionally putting energy there to care for this. And in these last 2 years, I mean, in these last 5 years, my creativity has just blossomed, my singing, my art. And so as my body, this one part of it that's been affected by oppression, by systemic racism in other places, I feel like my gifts are shining more clarity.
I love how you're starting to sort of share your identity and your journey and how your identity is intersecting and pushing up against, you know, the places in which you're working and living. And that in some ways, you know, Mellory, you know, we talked about that, the third part of affinity groups. And, you know, and I think affinity groups, to truth be told, I'm not a really big fan of that word. But I think what I like about it is it's acknowledging the intersectionality of our identities. I'm a much bigger fan of the word intersectionality because I think we bring a range of our identities to every given moment. And, you know, and it's acknowledging both the individual elements to it as well as the institutional pieces that are there. And it's actually, there's like kind of three levels to me of identity. There's like the internal, like just that internal dialogue, the individual, which is like, how is it that we as individuals are intersecting? And then there's the institutional sort of elements that, you know, create sort of a larger construct around. And so just as you're really having to, as I, you know, I was saying, like sort of building this new vocabulary around, you know, social emotional learning and embodied education. What I really hear is that we're really giving folks an opportunity to identify in ways that are true to who they are, and maybe that we have not been given that sort of space before. And so it's not so much that it's even using the construct of body, mind, heart is a construct, right? And so to say like, okay, who are you? And how do you want to express yourself? What does that look like sort of as you're on the front lines of this right now?
To hear everyone speak their truth and feeling in my body how it feels like to be seen, reflected in their truth. There are parts of what everyone has said that truly resonates for me as well. And hearing the articulation of it, hearing it in the frequency of another person's voice speaking it, it speaks to certain parts of my body. Sometimes I feel it in my ovaries. Sometimes I feel it in my heart. Sometimes I feel sensations in listening with my full body and knowing, yes, that's true. And I see it. And it's seeing me, that truth. And I'm one to listen and observe and model. That's, I feel like, what we're all doing here, teaching each other and showing each other how that could look like. I believe bodies learn from bodies, even if we're in physical distances. The voice carries so much power, so much information. And I am actually really grateful for the distance learning opportunities, actually, as a former classroom teacher. And now, in addition to my coaching work with the Teaching Well, I am still a private teacher to students in K-12 virtually in a district here in Chicago. And the distance learning opportunity has been such a great fit for my ultra sensitive nervous system. And I still feel my mirror neurons activated when I sense emotion through someone's voice or through body language. I feel their energy through that, and naming it really makes it feel human and connected. And I'm really grateful for those opportunities to share these stories as well in these educator spaces, so that we can, you know, pick each other's brains and stuff.
I really, you know, I, to be truth be told, we went into this conversation, Teacher Appreciation Week. Oh, awesome. My parents are teachers. Belinda and I are both teachers. But what I really feel like I'm taking away from this conversation is that you are really on the front lines of rebuilding the vocabulary to name and claim who we are. And in some ways, there's probably nothing greater than that right now, which is to be able to acknowledge, right? And what is to acknowledge is really a sense of belonging, right? That you belong in your own body, that you belong in community, that you are worthy and that you are here. So this has been really beautiful.
I would love to close this circle just with a card practice. I know you all each use the Gratitude Blooming card deck in your affinity group. And you know, this is, every moment is kind of a new moment. And this is a really special time to connect with all of you in this space. And Omar and I love to like be in the space of emergence. You know, half the time we have a lot of blanks in our scripts for the podcast because we just want to hold space for however it wants to unfold on its own, organically and wild, like the garden that Bong Yu sang about. So I'm so curious, as we close and as we bring our energies together in this moment, you know, what does nature want us to know collectively right now, as in the form of just appreciating ourselves and also just the earth that we get to live on and all that Mother Nature brings? All right. So now I'm going to move across, which, does anyone have a number 1 through 6? Which? Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4. 18, the daisy, simplicity. If you were to simplify your life, what would you choose to keep? I'm curious what each of you would say in this moment around this theme of simplicity.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to add a nuance to that prompt. What is the embodied feeling of simplicity as you look at this card?
Is it okay if I share?
Yes.
Yeah. So my kind of immediate reaction, I felt like an opening in my chest, and like the phrase that came up for me was like holding space. And I think holding space came up because like in the community that we're in right here with Mel and Bong and Tiffany and others who have been part of our group, I've never been in a space where I felt like there was an opening of my chest. Every time I come to that space, there's an opening there. And I think it's because it's about holding space for one another and how we show up and how we feel in a way that I don't know if there's words to express how that space has been just this wonderful community space where I feel like that's the piece that I would choose to keep in terms of simplicity. It doesn't sound simple, but it's like, how do we continue to just hold space for one another in a way that's embodied and we feel connected?
Yeah, Jennifer, Jen, I would like to piggyback off that. It's like, because as you spoke, my chest was very open as well. My, like, there's a lot of space there. And I feel the one of the biggest pieces of medicine in our AAPI educators for racial justice. And it's just like, even that name, you know, AAPI educators for racial healing is so powerful in itself. And the medicine I gained so much from this listening, just like having me being able to be in the same space as everyone is sharing so vulnerably. And it's like, wow, I get the opportunity and the honor to like hear people's stories like this. And as well as from when I speak, to be listened to, because I tend to be someone who like, no, it's about other people. It's like, you don't need to hear from me. So it's just like, thank you that I also get the space to be listened to and heard. So simplify my life, I would choose to keep listening, connection, community, the flowers, the plants, and just remember, it's like on this beautiful planet, we have everything we need to like live abundantly.
I resonate with everything that has been said. I do feel like this really concentrated kind of core in my gut when I think about simplicity, just like the ball. And I think about just presence with others and presence in nature. The most gratifying and meaningful moments in my life are not like giant accomplishments or whatever. It's just feeling connection with others and to the world around me. And it's such a simple thing. I think like often as an educator, I've always approached or learned to approach situations from like a place of like, what am I lacking? It's always like, we don't have enough money, we don't have enough time, we don't have enough whatever. And when you approach it from that way, it's like this never-ending race to nothing. You're never going to have enough. I mean, you know, but if you approach it from a way of like, what, you know, what is the core of like what we need? That's what I need. I need presence and connection.
Thank you for sharing. I would add on to this by saying that an embodied feeling of simplicity and feels like deep inhales and deep exhales. Simply that. As long as I have that in my life, I'm happy. And sharing it with other bodies that get to experience deep inhales and exhales. Whatever I need to do in order to create a space where feels like we can do that, or whatever I need to heal within myself or in my body, I'm committed to that. And the creativity piece does help with that. Singing, being my inner child, letting myself lead with that joy and allowing myself to just be here without worrying about any judgment or anything. It's such a gift. I'll choose to keep that.
Thank you. I think for me, what's coming up is heart resonance. Like, it feels different when you connect with others on that same resonance from the heart than, you know, the mind, or there's like a depth that I feel that I really appreciate and that I always try to seek in my relationships. And like, just meeting you all here for an hour for the first time, like, to remember that that's possible, you know, it doesn't take a lot of time. It just is like being present.
I think the embodied feeling of simplicity right now is my tongue is watering. And so simplicity is like a beautiful meal. And you just, when I am at a place where I can really just savor every bite, and you eat enough so that you don't feel hungry, but you don't eat so much that you feel sort of that too much feeling when you just ate that extra bite that you probably shouldn't have. And so simplicity is just kind of knowing what enough tastes like, and to really appreciate that. You know, Jennifer, you talked about the feeling of space. And the other thing that I like, Belinda knows this, is quotes. And so, because I think quotes really simplify an idea. And, you know, it's like what Mark Twain, I'm going to use a quote to explain a quote. That's meta right there. You know, Mark Twain said, you know, he'd write less if he had more time. But the quote that came to me was Chinese American geographer Yi Fu Tuan. And he said that place is security, space is freedom. We cling to the former and long for the latter. And so, how do we find that place of comfort, that place of security, but also give ourselves room to explore, room to find that freedom, room to find that self-expression? And so space is that sort of ability to do that, but we also sometimes need those boundaries to give us room. And yeah, just being able to appreciate that balance. Well, thank you so much for joining us in this podcast. We wish you just a whole lot of love for what you do. It is incredible work. And as I said earlier, this is not actually a podcast about Teacher Appreciation Week. This is really about what kind of society do we want to live in, and what is the vocabulary that we're going to create so that we can claim it and we can name it. So we can be it. Thank you.
Bye. Thanks.
Cheers.